Hello, I'm Bishop Jaime Soto. The pandemic continues to change the way we serve our communities. It has also given us opportunities. In this uncertain time, let's strive to partner effectively with parents. Let's work together to equip families for practicing their faith every day at home and in the community. Jesus is calling us to holiness and encourages us to rejoice and be glad in the midst of our challenges. This year, Ministry Days will virtually equip parish and school ministry leaders for these new realities, which include Zoom calls, Facebook Lives, and Insta stories. I invite all the faithful in the Diocese of Sacramento to attend our Ministry Days on Saturday, September 26th. There will be keynotes and 40 workshops in English and Spanish meant to inspire and equip you for ministry in your parish and your home. You can find more information and register at www.ministrydays.com.
From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it, which is pretty much the theme for Ministry Days 2020 coming up this Saturday. Actually, Friday and Saturday, there's two parts, but most people will attend Saturday. It will be virtual. You can go to ministrydays.com to learn all about it, or you can listen to Jennifer Campbell and learn all about it. Good day to you, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you, Bob?
Doing very, very well. As good as can be expected. Sort of okay.
that's 2020 for you.
It is. Oh boy, is it. Well, and it's not over yet.
No, I mean it's only September.
How did that happen? Well, we're all here, and God put us here, so there's a reason, and
yes,
let's find that reason. And one of the good things about September is Ministry Days. I mean, it truly is one of the good things about September.
It is. Ministry Days is one of the best things about September. It's a great way for us to end our month. I have been working for the diocese for a long time now, it feels like, and Ministry Days has always marked the end of one of our busy months. They're usually all fairly busy, but September seems to be a little bit more busy, so we get this great day to celebrate, to, you know, network with other people who were just like us, workers in the vineyard, and really have time to, you know, cultivate new skills and learn new tips and tricks that we can use in our classrooms when we're ministering to our families and all of those fun things.
Very well put. Very well put. Tell us about, there's 2 days. Tell us about Friday the 25th and then about Saturday the 26th.
So Friday the 25th is a day that's for school leadership and our parish leadership, so our pastors and DREs and youth ministers and any kind of, you know, catechetical ministry or liturgical ministry leaders that we have. You have two workshops, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. That's what we have. Dr. Bob McCarty is coming on as one of the morning presenter to talk about disaffiliation. And then in the afternoon, we'll have a workshop on interrupting the sin of racism in our parishes and in our schools.
Mm-hmm. Two really powerful topics. I've talked to Bob McCarty before, and boy, he's got it all together.
He does. He is. I've had the opportunity to spend time with him at different conferences, and just he's just someone who's just has so much knowledge and really has a heart for the church and understanding, you know, looking at the research and listening to people's stories, which is how he gets his research, to then to see where we should move forward and what that new landscape looks like.
You know, it's always interesting to me and always heartening to me to see someone who's a a very highly respected academic, if you will, Dr. Bob McCarty, have such great love for the church.
Yes.
He wears it on his sleeve.
And such great love for the church, and specifically for the young church.
Yes.
He has such great love and respect for that, for young people and the young church, knowing that they're not just the future of the church, they're the now of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And really wanting to make sure they feel welcomed. And so that's why this day, when we're talking about disaffiliation and we're talking about the sin of racism, it is a leadership day, a day for our leaders to really focus on. They're going to learn some information from these wonderful speakers we have, and then they're going to work as teams to come up with action steps. So they're going to leave this day with some action steps, the things to do in the schools and in their parishes to help interrupt the sin of racism and help, you know, bring more young people into our parishes and into the life of our parishes.
Very good. And that will be on Friday. And two or three speakers you have lined up for Friday afternoon to talk about the sin of racism, Dr. Ernest Uwazi and Dr. Jason Javier Watson, both highly qualified. And that should be powerful stuff.
Yeah, and then Saturday, which is our day for our volunteer catechists, our DREs, for anyone who does any kind of liturgical ministry, and this year, not just those people who see themselves as a catechist or as someone in a ministry leadership position, but really it's open to all parents and all families. Our bishops have been calling for us to empower families and empower parents to be the first catechist of their child. And in this year, where we are saying we're rejoicing and being glad, we're rejoicing and being glad in the fact that we are going to empower these parents. So we have many workshops that are focused for parents to be able to empower them to become that primary catechist, which is especially true and needed in this time right now.
Yeah, you know, I think some parents are going to go, me? I'm the one?
Right.
Me? I don't know anything, you know. But they are. The first teachers of the church, of the family, the first teachers, prime educators of our children, if you will. I think we lost our connection with Jennifer during the pandemic. Gabe, it's happened a lot, not to us, but you watch any of the talk shows on TV or the radio interviews, and people. I think the pandemic gets into people's phones. But yes, ministry days on the 25th will be Father Dr. Bob McCarty, and then in the morning, and then in the afternoon session will be Dr. Ernest Uwazi and Dr. Jason Javier Watson. And it all starts at 9 a.m. with the opening prayer with Bishop Soto. And then 9:30 a.m., passing on the faith to engage and accompany with Dr. Bob McCarty. And he has done a lot of research about what he calls disaffiliation, where people leaving the church. Why have they left the church? How do you bring them back? And just really, really some common sense, but some really good advice as well. And then after the lunch break at 1 o'clock, interrupting racism in school and parish settings with Dr. Ernest Uwazi and Dr. Jason Javier Watson. And then it all closes at 3:20 p.m. Of course, this is all virtual. And then on Saturday, there will be two keynote speakers, one in English, one in Spanish, and also 24 workshops in English and 21 workshops in Spanish. Some of them are similar, you know, just a different language, but many of them are unique. So there will be about 35 unique workshops. You get to pick two or three that day, but from now until the end of the year, you can watch all of them because this is all virtual, and watch them all online. And so you're really getting a bonus, a huge bonus this year in terms of you don't have to pick and choose. You can watch all because there's way more than three workshops that are worth watching for sure. So go to ministrydays.com to sign up to learn all about it. It's a very low cost, and Just wherever you are, it's going to be a wonderful day. Either, primarily for most people, the 26th of Saturday, the 26th, but also for parish staff, ministry leaders, teachers, things like that, Friday, September 25th. We'll take a break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff, for a fine introduction and for all you've done for our county and also for the county of Sacramento. We have 20 counties in the diocese, so we'll limit that to Sacramento, and also for all you've done for our church. I heard the sheriff speak at the Bishop Gago's Maternity Home annual dinner about a year and a half ago or a couple of years ago, and just did a bang-up job spreading a great pro-life message. Well, we are pleased and honored to welcome in Dr. Bob McCarty, who is going to be speaking at Ministry Days on Friday, this Friday, the 25th. Bob, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us again. I think it was maybe about a year ago when we talked.
Bob, that's what I was thinking, too. I thought it's probably just about a year ago that we talked, we did. It's good to be back again.
Thank you. What a year it's been. Dr. McCarty has been in professional ministry since 1973, serving in parish, school, diocesan, and national settings, has a bachelor's degree in sociology and theology from St. Joseph's University, a master's degree in religious education from LaSalle. I'm detecting a little Philadelphia in there somewhere.
Bob, there's a whole lot of Philadelphia in there.
My brother-in-law was Philadelphia, and he always told me about the Big Five. Who was it? It was LaSalle, St. Joseph's, Drexel, Villanova,
now you're going to my heart.
And Penn.
Going to my heart. Yeah. It was really, it was great. You know, if you love college basketball,
yeah,
the Big Five and the Palestra are like historic.
Yeah. Yeah,
man,
I just I got chills when he would tell me about it because I grew up loving college basketball, and then in many years as a sports writer got to cover college basketball, and had the best seat in the house for free, you know. And I'm saying, this is great. He would tell me stories about the Big Five, in Philadelphia. I guess all of them Catholic schools except for Penn. Is that Penn and Drexel? I guess
Penn and Temple. Penn, Temple, Villanova, St. Joe, LaSalle. But, you know, for any of the listeners here, if they ever grew up in an area where they had multiple colleges, you have to think, like, these five universities were all in proximity. The players for those teams probably played against each other in high school.
Sure, yeah.
And so these it was an incredible rivalry, and it was great fun and great basketball. So, yeah, I'm a little bit of a fanatic about that. So, and I'm a little proud of Philadelphia. So, okay.
Yeah,
we'll figure that.
My brother-in-law, late brother-in-law, grew up in South Philly, and he said people didn't ask you what neighborhood you were from. They asked you what parish you were from.
Boy, that is really true. That is very, very true of my experience of being Catholic in Philadelphia. Yeah, and in fact, I used to think it was funny how even if you asked your Protestant friends, they identify by the Catholic parish. I mean, this is, that's how Philadelphia was. That's exactly how it was.
Wow.
So, great stuff. Boy.
Great city, great stuff. And Villanova's still a power. LaSalle's okay. St. Joseph's has had some great years. But Villanova, what year before last they won the whole thing?
Yep, just a couple of years ago, Villanova won the national championship, yeah. Yep, the basketball is still as rich as it ever was.
Yeah, and all those drove all those Jesuit universities crazy.
Well, St. Joe's, being a Jesuit university, but there we are. It's all good.
Of course, here on the West Coast, it's Gonzaga. You know,
that's the disappointment. Sometimes on the East Coast, we don't get to see those teams.
Because they're playing at midnight back there.
Really? And so it was the best part of the March Madness was being able to see all those West Coast teams play.
Yeah.
So this year it was doubly disappointing with the pandemic. So
I had the great fortune of one day of covering a game in the kennel in Spokane, and wow, what a true dog. I mean, holy cow. And those students they're having so much fun. I mean, they're just having fun, and Gonzaga's up by 40. And, you know, and of course, I remember going back to the days of Bill Russell at USF, another great Jesuit university.
Wow.
And covered a game there last year and ran into Bill Cartwright. And Bill came over and did a radio interview at halftime and was just as gracious as could be, you know. And he still works there at USF. But to see those national championship banners there in their gym, when we do the big dance, office pool kind of thing, I'm sort of the guy in charge. And I have a special Catholic brackets. We have to pick how many games will the Catholic schools win.
That's really good. I used to work with a colleague who didn't understand anything about basketball, but come March Madness, she picked every team by first. Is it a Catholic school?
Yeah.
And then she decided she would go by, which saint do I think would beat the other saint? And so she had her own little system all figured out. This is how she was going to be rooting. She said, only Catholics, let's root one saint against the other.
That's great.
Okay, let's do that.
That's great. My teenagers do it by mascot. Will the birds beat the cats?
Can my mascot take your mascot?
When and if we're lucky enough to have March Madness again, I will send you the brackets we come up with.
I would have to enter.
It's a lot of fun. Well, love to have you enter.
Oh my gosh! Well, you'll add a little national flavor to this because I'm out here on the East Coast, right outside of Washington, D.C., so it'd be fun. It'd be fun to do that.
Absolutely. Well, Bob, we are flat out of time. It's nice talking to you.
I'm glad we we covered all the important stuff, really important. The bishop's going to be very happy about this conversation.
Absolutely. We certainly covered all the bases, and I tell you, everybody was crushed when we. I mean, I never thought I would see March Madness, the entire thing canceled, just boom, just in the flash of an eye, you know.
Yeah, but you know, looking back, it's a hard decision, but the right decision.
Oh, it was. Boy, absolutely.
It's hard. It's just. But we're Catholics, you know. We're used to this whole idea of sacrifice. It's part of who we are.
That's
what we have to do.
But you're going to be coming. Well, you're not coming out here, but you're going to be virtually here, and we would look forward to you coming out. You're also a member of the adjunct faculty at Catholic University of America in Washington D.C. and the University of Dallas. That's a tough commute.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. The Washington D.C. one, that's not such a bad commute where I am. But the University of Dallas, this year my course will be online.
Mm-hmm.
So the miracle of technology allows us to do pretty good face-to-face education. And that course, interesting enough, is about young adults in the church.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a series of lectures around young adults and how do you engage them in church thing, what's that like, what's going on in their spirituality. And Bob, it's not unlike what I'll be talking about on Friday with the school teachers, actually. What do we know about youth and young adults today and spirituality and spiritual journey? How do we foster that as people committed to the faith? So there's a lot of parallels for me.
Well, you've studied and you serve as a project coordinator for St. Mary's Press's research project, Going Gone, The Dynamics of Disaffiliation and Young Catholics. What do you mean by disaffiliation?
Yeah, it was a national study done. We were struck by why are so many Catholic young adults walking away from church? What causes them to disaffiliate?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can learn a lot about an organization like church. You can learn a lot about church by looking at who's on the fringe and what can the people on the fringe tell us. And so we went to these young adults who are on the fringe of church, who no longer identify as Catholic. We tried to understand what happened. What were the experiences that led them to walk away from church?
Mm-hmm.
What were the challenges? The question I keep asking myself, where are their hungers being fed if they're not being fed at church? And so it was a fascinating study of young adults. And Bob, here's the thing that's so fascinating to me is that these are really good young adults.
Mm-hmm.
These weren't angry young adults. These are young adults who are searching, and for whatever reason, whatever they're searching for, they weren't finding it in their faith community.
Were they primarily cradle Catholics?
It was quite a mixture, but yes, I would say the majority of them, because the criteria we used is they had to at one point in their life identify as Catholic. So the majority of them had been baptized Catholic. We found that for some of them, their families were still active, but they weren't. For some of them, their families also left, and sometimes that was a contributing factor. So one of the difficulties in the whole thing is that there was no single reason. Invariably, what happens, Bob, is when you're talking about these issues, pastoral leaders will say, all right, tell us what to do. Tell us the three things you want us to do, and we'll do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's part of the problem. There are no three things. It's not that easy. It's far more complex. These young adults are searching. They're hungry for something. And so I would use the image of you can't think of this as a programmatic response. Don't think of it as recruitment, but think of it as how do we, as disciples of Jesus, how does our faith community walk with and accompany our young people on their journey?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of interesting, Bob, because it's like I can't tell you where to go, but I can walk with you as you discover it. And I'm convinced that I am so convinced if we become the kind of a community that walks with our young people on their spiritual journey, we become the kind of community they want to be part of.
Hmm.
But they have to make that choice in.
Where did you find these people?
And that's kind of a research question about how you find former Catholics. And we had a contract with a research company that does this for a variety of surveys. We had to say, here's the criteria, and then they do whatever research organizations do to find you the representative sample. But this is the other part of that, Bob. And, as part of the study, I was able to travel around and actually find young adults who would be willing to be interviewed on videotape.
Mm-hmm.
That I spent hours with these young adults videotaping their stories, and then anybody who's ever done taping, they know that you have to tape for an hour to get your,
yeah,
your 3.5 or 4 minutes of really good tape.
To get the nugget, that's right.
But I had a chance to sit with 5 of these young adults individually and just listen to their stories about their faith journey. And Bob, one of the challenges that came out of that, and this is part of what I say to church people, to pastoral leaders, one of the things they would say to us is they would thank us for listening to their stories. And I said, I should be thanking you. And they said, no, thank you for listening.
Hmm.
No one has ever asked me about my story. And so one of the things when I do training for pastoral leaders, I say one of the things we can do, create an opportunity to listen to their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think young adults, and I suspect this is true for adults as well, I think they're just crying to tell their story to somebody. They want to be heard. Please know me. Please notice me. Please know my name. Listen to my story. And I say, and I think it's such a humbling thing to do.
Wow.
So, that was one of the blessings.
As a dad, you're teaching me stuff too, because you know we have 4 teenagers, and their faith journeys are all different. Yeah, they all go to Mass with us, you know, and they all. But I just know when I talk to them one on one, their faith journeys are all different, and it's they're not just here's teenagers, let's throw them a pizza and a basketball.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that era is gone. That is past. And so, I love what you said that your kids. First off, did your kids play basketball? Because I'm thinking you have 4. You're pretty close.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There's your 5.
Yeah, that's yes, indeed.
But I like what you said about how they're all different, because sometimes even sitting at my parish, I'm very involved at my parish, St. Francis of Assisi, and at Mass on Sunday, I stop and I look around, and I'm looking to see, are there any young people here? Are there any young adults? Are those kids here with their families? Are they here individually? And then after Mass, are they talking to someone? Do they feel connected? And for a while at my parish, we had a goal. We wanted every kid, when they walked into church, to be greeted by name. And mm-hmm. so we worked as a youth ministry team. We were all volunteers. But the goal was, can we call each kid by name? Because there's something about that that says, I recognize you. I notice you.
Yep.
I know your name. And welcome into the community here. And that was harder than we thought. We all thought that, we know all of our kids. We didn't. We didn't know them all. And so some of these kids, we had to go up and ask them, I'm sorry, I don't know your name. What's your name? Where do you go to school? And all that. But that was a profound lesson.
Yeah, that's hard. I have two older kids than the teenagers, and so I've got 6 kids and 6 grandkids, and I'm just now getting around to actually, on a good day, I can name all 12.
Okay, so we do get to the age where we need a cheat sheet.
That's right. That's right. A cheat sheet and a good pair of glasses.
Well, Bob, that's much better than numbering them. Number four.
You know what I do? I say with the teenagers, I say we've got one that's, we've got 18, 17, 16, and 15, and those are their names. You, 15, you know.
Yeah, but every year it gets thrown off.
So it really throws you off. It's really strange. We realize today that the one who turned 18 in August, just last month, she gets to vote in a presidential election after turning 18. The one who just turned 17 in August, one full year behind her, just turned 17 in August. She won't get to vote in a presidential election until she's 21.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. Boy. It's fascinating. What interesting times, you know. And I know on Friday I'm going to be speaking to all the Catholic school teachers, but on Saturday I'm going to zoom in and do a live presentation for the catechetical leaders, for the ministry leaders, say, on Saturday. And my topic on Saturday is, how do you engage young people in God talk?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like we were just talking about. How do you engage kids today? Can we help them find a way to talk about their faith journey? So something as simple as, and I've done this with high school kids, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong is your relationship with God? On a scale of 1 to 10, how's your prayer life? And what I find, because you say on a scale of 1 to 10, it gives them 20 possible answers, because a lot of times they pick halves. It's a 4.5, it's a 6.5, it's a 7.5. It's fascinating. Then you think, well, what made it a 4.5 or 6.5? But I find just asking the questions and listening to their answers and engages them around their faith journey. And so, first off, it's humbling. It's humbling to be invited into their story. But I find with the kids, they so appreciate if an adult is willing to listen.
Yep.
To just listen. I know we've all done this. There's a difference between listening to understand and listening to respond. And I'm sure we've all had the occasion when we're in a conversation and we're already planning our response mm-hmm. to what the person is saying, as opposed to really trying to listen to understand what they're saying. And I find with kids, something as simple as scale of 1 to 10. How's school going? Scale of 1 to 10. How are things at home? This is really recently, because of the research, I've asked kids, scale of 1 to 10, how convinced are you that God exists? Scale of 1 to 10, how convinced are you that God loves you? How convinced are you that God communicates with you? And boy, sometimes the conversations are so rich, and it's simply because we're asking. We are asking questions and listening to their stories. That's exactly what Pope Francis means when he uses the language of accompaniment. What does it mean to walk with? To walk with means to listen to. And I just find out that's part of what we should be doing in our pastoral ministry.
Instead of just waiting for your opportunity to talk and say, well, you need to believe this. You're letting them just say what they do believe.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. You know, I'm not really sure that worked even in our generation. I know it doesn't work today.
Yeah.
So, it's really, but that doesn't mean, we give up our own beliefs. But the challenge is, how do we share our beliefs in a way that makes sense to them?
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned, and this goes back early in my youth ministry career, we used to have this little adage that said, you have to earn the right to be heard. And you earn the right to be heard by entering into relationships of trust and respect and compassion and non-judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And if we create those kinds of relationships, I find kids will talk. They will share their stories.
We're talking with Dr. Bob McCarty, who is going to be here for Ministry Days, both Friday and Saturday, doing a workshop on Saturday as well. Bob, I'm sensing that there's not a stereotypical answer to those questions. You're not getting 9 out of 10 say the same thing.
No, Bob, I tell you, it's all over the place. And there's something. This is a great example. So here I am teaching confirmation in my parish. I have 10 or 12 kids. I have them for 7 weeks, immediate preparation. The very first night, scale of 1 to 10, how's your relationship with God? One of my young people who's in confirmation. He's 14 years old. My relationship is a zero.
Mm.
What makes your relationship a zero? He goes, oh, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God and all this stuff.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, you're in my confirmation class. I'm thinking, he may think it's a zero, but I know that he's in that class. There's something else going on here. And so from the first night, because I respected his answer, I didn't critique it. I didn't make fun of it. In my head, I was thinking all kinds of things, but mm-hmm. I didn't say it. And I had it for 7 weeks. And by the end of the seventh week, we asked the kids individually, are you going to go through with confirmation? This has to be your choice. Are you choosing in or not? And he chose in.
Hmm.
And I thought, this is the... Now, and by the way, here's the thing. The same kid who said, I have no relationship with God, he was the first teenager in our parish to sign up for our summer mission trip.
Oh, wow.
And when it was announced that we're doing a summer mission trip, and I forget where we were going, he's the first kid to sign up. And I'm thinking, aha, you know what? You have a relationship with God. You just don't know it.
You still
know, or whatever you're picturing God to be, I don't think that's the God we're talking about here. So, if you know, that kind of stuff happens. It really happens if we create the opportunities for kids to share their story.
So when you ask, does God communicate with you? What kind of answers did you get to that?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of our kids, a lot of my kids, I have to say that, my kids, they always think of prayer as us talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly is. But I said to them, but what if you reverse that? What if prayer is God talking to us? I said, what if we found a way to talk less and listen more? And how many different ways can you imagine God communicating with us?
Mm-hmm.
And Bob, they can answer that. Kids talk about things like, I experience God's presence when I'm in nature, when I'm in the woods, when I'm in the mountains, when I'm down the ocean, when I'm on the beach, you know. I experience God, one kid said, I experience God most in my room when things are quiet. Another kid, I experience God, sometimes God talks to me through my parents, sometimes through my teachers. So, you know, they know. We've just not asked them, but they know. They really do know, and they can identify it. So it's just a profound moment.
For those that were cradle Catholics and, you know, went through, you know, the normal stuff, whether they were going to Catholic school or, like me, we went to catechism class on Saturday mornings and snuck our transistor radios in so we could listen to Lindsey Nelson and the Notre Dame game.
The fact that you said transistor radio, you know, that is kind of dating ourselves.
It is. My kids are saying, what? Transistor radio? What was that, Dad? I said, yeah, you got the signal by the fillings in your teeth would pick up the signal.
No, seriously, the things you used to think, oh, my Lord.
Yeah, so, but fortunately, in the Diocese of Sacramento, back when I was a kid, the term Irish priest was redundant. Everybody was an Irish priest. And so they really didn't mind that little Bobby was sitting in the back listening to the Notre Dame game because they wanted to know the score.
Well, yeah, I think that was part of our reality.
It was.
But now I think our kids are so aware that we live in such a global church. That's pretty powerful.
So, you know, people, you know, we all, I'm going to say we all had our moments where, you know, I don't know, we faded away or we wandered away and came back and reverts and all those stories. But there are a lot of people that went through all what we would think are the correct steps. You know, mom and dad went to Mass and mom and dad fed the poor and modeled it at home and everything else. And 15 years old, and the kid says, there's nothing there for me.
Yeah.
You must hear those stories.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. And you know, and Bob, one of the hardest part of this whole thing is when you hear it from the parents, and you can hear the sadness in their voice.
They
want their kids to have the faith that they have.
Yep.
They want their kids to have that relationship with Jesus that motivates them. And so sometimes, depending on the adult, and depending on my relationship with the adult, I'll say something like, have you shared that with your kid? Does your kid know how important mm-hmm. your relationship with Jesus? A friend of mine in my parish with three teenage boys, she had such a tough time getting them to go to Mass. She was going through her own personal crises with a divorce. It was just a painful time. And she was in tears, and she's saying, oh, it's such a fight to get my kids to go to church with me. And what do I do? And my wife, Maggie, was so good at this because she was talking with her, and she goes, have you ever told your kids why going to Mass is important to you?
To you,
yeah. Have you ever said to your kids, I love to go to church because I need that hour. I need to sit. I just need to sit and let go of my worries, let go of my concerns. I need to sit and be in the presence of God. Mm-hmm. And so she told her kids that. And sure enough, we would see one kid. We would see two kids. On the holidays, we see all three kids. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, because we never told them. We assumed they were absorbing it by osmosis.
Yeah.
But we never told them. And so I think, and that's for adults, you know, because we're not used to that. So one of the challenges is, can we help parents? Can we help adults talk about their faith in a way that makes sense to our kids? Ah, what a powerful lesson that was for us.
Oh, I can imagine. You know, I found that there are times in my life where, with my kids, especially when they were littler, where the biggest influence in terms of faith was grandma. Because they had a different kind of, my mom was a softie, but man, and her love for those kids, for those grandkids, was so powerful to them that when grandma said, let's go to church, boy, that mattered.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great story. What a great memory, you know. And I hope your grandmother knew that. I hope your grandmother knew the impact she was having.
Yeah.
You know? That's a great thing.
Yeah, you're right. Hopefully they knew it. You know, it's amazing how many times, if you go back to sports, I'll see a kid, basketball player after winning the championship, or a football player, and first person they thank is grandma.
I'd like
to thank my grandma. Probably a lot of them were raised by grandma. You know.
That is so touching. I think there's a lesson in there. You know, I think that I've seen in other places, I've read in other kinds of research, the power of that, like a generation removed, that sometimes parents, they have a particular responsibility, and I think that's harder. But anybody who's a grandparent, you said you have your six, I have my three grandkids. There's something that allows you, when you're the grandparent, I have found that grandparenting, first off, it's my new favorite hobby. So grandparenting is my best experience of unconditional love.
Yep.
I don't have to worry about my grandkids the same way I worried about my own kids.
Yeah.
There's something about being a generation removed that my daughter can be. She can be the parent. She can be the disciplinarian. She can do all that. And me, my job is to love those kids. Let them love me. That's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Something about that. Hmm.
I've never had a grandchild be sassy or mad, or doesn't happen, you know. And you know, it doesn't happen too much with our kids, but you know, there are times when they're unhappy with you, or they, you know, they didn't clean their room, or they didn't do their homework, or, you know, and you have to sit down and have the little bit of the tough talk with them, and they're not real happy about that. But with a grandkid, you're right. You can just spoil away, and they and they love you.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's like I'm not as concerned about your grades as your parents are.
That's right.
My job here is just to love you for who you are, you know, and this will all work out. We'll handle all this.
Oh, so, Bob,
that's a great image.
With all this research and all the things you learn, where do you go with it?
See, that's a good question. And now, excuse me. One of my key takeaways from all of this is that we don't have a believing issue.
Mm-hmm.
We have a belonging issue. That in our generation, Bob, kind of the baby boomer generation, our process of coming to faith was believing led to belonging. Our families would find people who believed what we believed, and that's where we belong, and we called them parishes. In this generation, the process has been reversed. The first step is belonging. That the first thing that young people do today, where do I belong? Where am I welcomed?
Mm-hmm.
Where am I known? Where can I be accepted for who I am? And then what happens is, when I belong here, I want to know what you believe that has you welcoming me. And so you get to the same place, but the starting point is different. And so the first learning is we don't have a believing issue. We have a belonging issue. That's the first step. How do we help our young people experience that real sense of, genuine sense of welcome and belonging? And the second issue is we don't have a youth issue. We have a faith community challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just young people walking away from religion. The studies are highlighting that a fair number of adults are walking away as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to step back. Anybody who's in pastoral leadership has to step back and say, let's assess the quality of our faith life in our parish. What sense of community do we have here? Are we welcoming to everyone? Do people know they can belong here, that they'll be accepted here? And not just kids, but can we extend that? Can we engage and accompany not just our young people, but their families, single adults, young adults, older adults? Can we be intentional about that? And so if pastoral leaders can keep those two things in mind, it's about belonging first. That's the starting point. And if we can begin to see we don't have a youth issue, we have a faith community challenge here, then I think that helps pastoral leaders really kind of shape their ministry to be responsive to the needs of children, youth, young adults, and adults today.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head when you said we have a belonging issue, because the people I've talked to, and informally, not in a research way, but that have fallen away from the church, and not just kids, adults, young adults, middle-aged adults, older adults even, it's rarely, well, I just don't believe in God anymore. I don't hear
right.
that. I hear, I felt like a stranger there, or I felt, a number of reasons, all of which you can almost say, I didn't feel like I belonged there.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever run into this, but I had a young adult say to me just recently, he said, you know, Bob, he said, you know what the new church is for young adults? I said, what? He goes, fitness centers.
Oh, yeah.
I said, what? He goes, fitness centers. He says, you walk into a fitness center, they greet you by name.
Yep.
They know your name. They greet you by name. They're happy to see you. I had a friend of mine who belongs to a fitness center, and she said to me, if you don't show up for a couple of weeks, they call or text to find out where you've been.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, my God, could you imagine if we did that in our parishes?
Yeah.
If we started saying, who's not been here for a while? How are they? Somebody has to give them a call. We have to make contact here. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I think there's so much that we can learn from where young adults today are going to have those hungers fed. Because I think that's what we can do. We can do this.
Yeah, there's
part of who we are as Catholics.
That's well said. There's a real community there, and you know it's a very accepting community. It's like you think, oh, it's a fit. They're all like Charlie Atlas, and they're all in great shape, and they don't care if you're 30 pounds overweight. They don't care if you're can barely move on the treadmill, or can only swim 3 laps before you have to get out of the pool.
Yeah.
Or can only lift 10 pounds. They don't care. They welcome you. They call you by name. And it's a community.
Yeah. Bob, isn't true? Everybody in our generation, what's the thing we remember from the TV show Cheers? Not that bar.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, where
belonging.
Cheers.
Where
everyone knows your name.
Yep.
You know, and Norman walking in, everybody knows Norm. Now, I know you can't do a darn mass, but how funny would that be? But this whole idea of to be in a community where everybody knows your name,
yep,
there's something about that. There is. And so I think there's lessons in there. So I don't think it's as complex as we might want to make it. I think there are some real simple truths, real simple principles that I think we can apply to parish life that I think will enable us to become more effective at having our young people feel like this is the place where you belong.
Boy, that's,
you belong here.
So well said. Everybody loved that show. And remember, the one thing I remember from Cheers is Sam, and I can't remember his girlfriend's name, but
Diane,
yeah, his longtime girlfriend. And, you know, she's always sort of pushing him to get married. And his line to her, and I've said it to my wife a few times, he says, "Why should I get married? Right now, I can have donuts for dinner." And so every time my wife goes off to visit the relatives, or she's got an evening event or something that she has to go to, she'll say to me, she'll look at me and laugh, and she'll say, "You can have donuts for dinner tonight."
So I was going to say, so Bob, how's that work out for you? Oh, how funny is that?
Well, Bob, we've run flat out of time. I think I could talk to you all day. We greatly appreciate you coming to Ministry Days. We appreciate all you do. Are there some reading materials you can refer us to?
Yeah, I'll be talking about that both on Friday and on Saturday. There's a wonderful book for people in church leadership, and it's called Growing and Engaged Church.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a simple book put out by the Gallup organization.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about it looks at this whole issue of engagement in a faith community, growing an engaged church. And so and in fact, Bob, I didn't even mention this. On Wednesday, I'm speaking to all the seminarians at St. Mary's Seminary in Baltimore.
Oh, very good.
I have 65 seminarians and some of their seminary faculty. And I have a full day with them to talk about engagement and what does engagement look like in a parish. And I'm going to use that book as my cornerstone, Growing an Engaged Church. But I don't want to be tooting my own horn, but a year ago I have a book that came out.
Oh, good.
Called Faith Talk. Yeah. It's called Faith Talk. And it's really, how do you engage young people in God talk? And it's a very simple book. But it's great for parents and teachers, youth ministers, catechists, pastors, anyone who wants to talk to kids about God. I wrote this book to help people. Here's 7 techniques. Here's how you do it. Here's the questions to ask. It's all in there. Faith Talk.
Very good. Who's the publisher?
St. Mary's Press.
St. Mary's Press. Very good.
Yeah, it came out of that research of going on. I wrote it as a follow-up because I thought I got to write some of this stuff down.
Very good. Faith Talk, St. Mary's Press by Dr. Bob McCarty. Bob, God bless you and your family and your ministry, and I sure hope we talk again soon.
Bob, thank you very much. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the conversation. Blessings on your ministry, and maybe someday, we're going to meet face-to-face in Sacramento.
In Sacramento or maybe at the Palestra.
Oh, my God. I've died and gone to heaven. There we are.
Very good.
Bob, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. Take care. That's Dr. Bob McCarty, who will be speaking at Ministry Days, ministrydays.com to sign up. portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the words I